A podcast of the cinema.
This is actually Linoleum Knife After Dark.
Yes, it's been a while since we've...
Have we ever recorded this late in the day?
Oh, sure, yeah. No, we've used the phrase Linoleum Knife After... Like, I think we've done this even at night before.
We have?
Yeah.
I don't remember
anything. Right now it's magic hour here in Los Angeles.
I'm Dave White. I'm a film critic. And you are...
Alonzo Duralde.
Also a film critic.
Also a film critic.
Also, we're married. If you're first time here, you don't know what this is. It's two dudes who are film critics.
Yes.
Actual film critics. Married.
Yes. So if this is your first time, welcome. And if you're a regular, sorry, we're a little late this week.
I'm not sorry. We're late because I went to the opera.
You were all fancy at the opera.
I wasn't fancy, really, because... Loretta and I sat in the, what do they call them? The worst seats.
The cheap seats.
The tippity top of the balcony. That's kind of where I am all the time.
Right.
Anyway, because it's cheap. It's inexpensive.
Yeah.
I didn't put my pop filter on
no.
the mic today.
You're getting a little more mouth action.
I got some poppity.
Yes.
Okay, so... I went to see Verdi's Macbeth.
Mm-hmm.
Placido Domingo sang Macbeth.
Oh.
Technically, he's too old to sing Macbeth.
Yeah.
But that dude can still knock it out.
Really?
Yeah.
He's still got it.
He's still got it. I don't know if my ears are being weird or not. I mean, they are mostly always being weird because I'm half.
Mostly deaf.
Yeah. But I could have sworn there was a moment in this opera when Lady Macbeth aimed for a high note and didn't quite get there.
Now, is this one of the operas you've been listening to in your car?
Well, that's what I always do.
Well, you don't. Not every single opera we've ever been to, you also own it and listen to it beforehand.
Yeah.
We went to see Pagliacci and that other thing, and you didn't...
Oh, no, yeah, okay. Pagliacci, I was going in cold.
Yes.
On Pagliacci.
And what was the other one?
I'm blanking.
It was paired with it. You didn't have that one either.
Those two I went in cold.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you don't always,
but
you did have Macbeth.
Almost always.
Okay.
Like almost every time, if I'm going to an opera, my car is old. I have a compact disc player still in my car.
And you are old because you just said the words compact disc.
I have a compact disc player in my car. It plays the compact discs. And I... Go, here's a wonderful thing. If you like opera and you live in Los Angeles, not only can you go to the opera for an inexpensive amount of money, but you can learn all about the opera that you're going to go see by going to Amoeba and going to the used opera section and picking it up for $5. No joke. Everything is there. I'm hearing a... How many...
I'm hearing a bit of a breeze, but I think that's just our room tone.
I see. Okay. Cheap operas, and I just listen to them in the car. If I'm unfamiliar with the one I'm about to go see, I buy it, I listen to it in the car.
So you know Macbeth well enough to notice if the diva was missing something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I thought I did. Now... In this woman's defense,
yes,
the version that I'm listening to in the car is from like 1954, and it's Maria Callas Lady Macbeth. I don't think she ever. I mean, maybe when she got older, she didn't hit notes, but
not in a recording studio, certainly.
No, this was not. It was a live recording.
Okay, still,
yeah, it was at the Scala.
She let them release it.
So, but then when Lady Macbeth was done with the aria that I thought I heard a not quite hit high note.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was yelling, Brava. So maybe I'm wrong.
People Yeah, you know, here's the thing. And I wasn't at this opera, so I've no, this has nothing to do with this woman singing or her success or lack thereof.
Yes.
But the standing ovation means nothing. Because everybody does it now. Like, every single show, play, thing I ever attend always ends with a standing ovation because everyone's getting up to leave.
Right.
It's not like they got up and then they're going to sit down again. Like, they were already halfway out the door anyway.
We were.
So they might as well clap and stand. They're multitasking. They're not necessarily telling you that you're the greatest.
You're right about that. No. This was not the end, though.
I know. But I'm just saying, it may be.
They were yelling brava, which is a thing you do only at the opera.
Right. I understand that. But I'm just saying, it may be this instinct now where it's sort of the everybody gets a trophy, where after somebody does a big aria, just for the fact that they showed up and did the big aria, even if it wasn't technically perfect, everybody's got their brava ready to go anyway, just because of she just got through the whole thing.
If I were the type of person that would yell brava ever, I would have yelled it, because you know what, maybe you hit a bum note, but you know what else, you're singing on stage with Placido Domingo.
No,
which means you're something. And also, I'm an idiot when it comes to opera. I was talking about this to Loretta during halftime, and we were standing in the lobby drinking our Cokes, and
you know it's not called halftime.
It's halftime. It's so,
because you're such a sports guy.
This is halftime.
Oh, pizza's here. We'll be back momentarily. So yeah, I'm not saying one bum note necessarily, you know.
When did you pause that?
When the pizza guy arrived.
Did you say?
I said the pizza guy was here. We'll be right back, and we're back.
Oh, okay. We're back now.
Yes, what I'm saying.
We had some pizza.
Yes, I think that's clear.
Yeah.
That was intuitively obvious.
It's our dinner time.
Anyway, yes, like I said, we're doing this late. It's getting dark in here. It's crazy.
That's what happens at night.
Yeah, I don't know that one bum note necessarily deprives you of a brava.
No,
and also, you were the Sunday matinee crowd.
It does not deprive you of the brava.
She saves the good stuff for Saturday night.
What I was saying to Loretta was that
during the intermission.
Yes. Listen, whatever you want to call it, it's when you pee and get you the Coca-Cola.
Gotcha.
In the world of listening to operas and going to operas, I am as dumb as the average multiplex doofus who walks up to the box office and says, I don't know what I want to see.
What's showing?
What's showing? Yeah.
What's good?
My whole life, I would take my mom to the movies. And no matter what it was, good or bad, unless it was really good, she would walk out and say, that was cute.
But, okay.
But if it was something like Vertigo,
uh-huh,
which we did see together one afternoon in Dallas in the 90s, she walks out of that and says, Alfred Hitchcock's a pervert. She didn't say that was cute. And she goes, and I hate that. And I hate that movie.
Look, the fact that you do your homework and buy the $5 used CD, that already puts you ahead of
really,
most of the multiplex people.
No, it does not. Here's why. I don't have a discerning ear.
Nonetheless.
I am in debt to people who write about opera, who can tell me the mediocre from the fine, from the very great.
Okay.
You know?
Well,
and then a listener, Tony, one of our listeners, who's an opera guy, who's actually taught me things about opera, different singers that he thinks I should listen to and stuff.
All of which,
that dude
you
knows stuff. And so I'm...
You're no
everything,
expert.
Everything granted that happens to me at the opera, I walk out and I say, that was great. Like, it doesn't matter. It could be an incredibly mediocre performance, and I will not be able to tell.
You did not say that was great when you dragged me to the...
That's a different and a long time ago. And that wasn't really opera. That was a choral performance that was just nuts.
That was part of the opera season.
We've talked about it before.
I know.
Let people go back and listen to that.
Wherever
episode.
That story is. Dave dragged me to the opera once. The first time dragged me to the opera, it did not go well. Thankfully, I allowed him to do it again, and it got better.
Anyway, I think everything is great
gotcha.
When I'm at the opera. It can be good. It can be bad. It can be the... It can be a legendary performance, and I won't know.
Right.
It can be the crappiest version of that opera in the world, and I won't know.
Well, then maybe a lot of the Brava people don't either.
No, they do.
If you're at that
level
assume.
Where you're yelling Brava, if you're a Brava level person,
those could just be people that like to yell things.
Long,
like they go to Dodger games and just scream for nine innings. You know,
I'm gonna go to a Dodger game and yell Brava to a man.
Yes, and then they come to the opera, and they're like, we want a pitcher, not a belly itcher. They really got to get their act together.
Films.
And you're having fancy, heart-healthy wine.
I am having wine right now. I'm wine podcasting right yes. now. Well, I just had pizza, so it's time for wine.
I know.
But there's no beer.
I feel like I've suddenly stepped into an episode of Cougar Town.
We're out of beer in the fridge. I would normally have beer.
I see.
With the pizza, but it's... Now there's some wine.
Well, red wine I think is better with the pizza.
Also, it's
anyway.
Nighttime.
Cutting that grease.
Whatever. You tell yourself that.
Look, Glenda Jackson said it in Hopscotch, and I choose to believe it.
Just keep holding Glenda Jackson over my head.
Well, oh, what a coincidence. Glenda Jackson happened to beat your contender, the Hamburglar, in this week's Fantasy Dancing with the Stars on LKTV. And if you're an LKTV subscriber,
that was a nice segue.
At our Patreon page, you get to cast a vote in this week to decide whether Joyce Carol Oates or Joan Didion will emerge triumphant on the Fantasy Dancing with the Stars dance floor.
Right.
For more information, go to patreon.com/linoleumknife.
It's $4 a month. So not expensive.
Nope.
It's even less than going to the opera.
Much.
Films.
Films.
The best film of the week is Aquarius.
Well, the best film that you saw this week, yes, because I saw two also, I mean, Aquarius is great. But I saw two other amazing films that we're going to talk about next week
yes.
so that you can get caught up. One of them being Kelly Reichardt's Certain Women. Which
I adore Kelly Reichardt.
Yes, you're a big fan.
I'm a huge fan.
I saw it at Sundance. So if you want to read my review on therap.com, it is there. And if you want to see my review on What the Flick, Christy and I talked about it this week. Christy and I also talked about Tower, a new documentary, which is an animated film about the 1966 University of Texas sniper shooting. It's also extraordinary, but Dave's going to catch up on that this week. We'll talk about it next time around. But in the meantime,
I'm behind.
You can go see my review on What the Flick on YouTube, or go to the Wrap and read Robert Abley's rave review, either way.
So,
but yes, Aquarius is, other than those two, the film of the week.
Do you know how to pronounce the filmmaker's name?
I'm not entirely
You're Spanish.
Sure. Yeah, and he's
Portuguese.
Well, he's Brazilian.
He's Brazilian.
And Portuguese.
Yeah.
It's like Kleber Mendonça Filho, I think.
Is that how you say it?
I think.
He made the astoundingly good Neighboring Sounds.
Yes.
And this is his follow-up
right.
to that.
Which premiered at Cannes this year and is now making its way into a limited release in the U.S.
How many cities did it open in?
I think this weekend was like L.A., New York, and then I think it expands out to like D.C. and San Francisco and some other markets next weekend.
I assume this is going to have some legs.
It is also Brazil's Oscar entry this year.
As well it should be.
Yeah.
It stars... Sonia Braga
yes.
as a woman named Clara, who is mm-hmm. 65. She's a widow.
She's a retired rock journalist.
She's a music critic, yeah. And she lives in an old apartment building, and she owns her apartment.
Her unit, yeah.
And the name of the building is Aquarius.
It's right across from the beach.
She's lived there her entire life. She raised her children there. She is a fan of her home.
Yes.
And
she's buddies with the lifeguard. She's like a neighborhood fixture. Everybody knows her. Everybody loves her.
Yeah.
Because she's Sonia Braga. Come on.
She is facing down some developers.
Yes. They have bought up every other unit in the building. She is the last holdout.
And the other people who sold their apartments can't get their final money installments
until the building comes down.
Until the building comes down. So currently, developers hate her. Every other tenant.
Her former neighbors hate her.
They hate her. And she's not budging.
Yeah. And even her children are kind of like
annoyed with her,
trying to get her to sell.
Because she's 65 and they feel like she's not safe in the building.
Right.
But whatever you think of someone who is 65, you should perhaps rearrange your ideas.
Yeah. If you're thinking this is like a little old lady stands up against the developers, not quite.
Sonia Braga, I don't know what a 65-year-old person is supposed to look like, but she looks like Sonia Braga.
Yeah, she is a force of nature.
And so
she is the Spider Woman.
Pretty much. Not only, well, yeah, but I mean, she is such a headstrong, intelligent, indomitable
yes, that's
human
the word.
Being that you assume that over the course of this 2 hour and 30 minute film, it's about 2.5.
Yeah.
Yeah. That she is absolutely going to get her way.
Yeah.
I won't tell you what happens, but it is not simply about the plot.
Right. It's a character piece.
It's a character study. It is about what it means to get older and lose a little bit of your agency.
Sure.
Forces will conspire against you as you age.
Right.
To take away your ability to determine your own course. Your spouse or your partner may die, or you may just be divorced and not remarried, or you may have never married. You may
have health issues.
Have health issues. You may find yourself suddenly poor. You may find yourself staring down the face of a very powerful development group.
This is one of those movies where, and you know, he did this in Neighboring Sounds as well, where it's about a lot of things without ever being about them.
Right.
You know, so like there's a whole
about them.
You know what I mean? she has a maid, a cleaning woman who she's known for years and years.
Yes.
And so there's, you know, they touch upon the whole notion of, you know, poverty in Brazil, about racial differences in Brazil between like the, so the you know, because it like any country that's been colonized, you know, you've got your light skin and your dark skin and
right.
what that means in the larger scope of society. Just a lot of different things just kind of thrown in there, and they feel organic and they feel like they're part of this tapestry, but they don't call attention to themselves. They're just, this is what a woman in these circumstances, in this country, living this life, these are things that she would encounter along the way.
In anyone's life, there is friendship, and there is sex, and there is work, and there's a family relationship of one sort or another. There is trouble that you have to navigate. And there is also the body of information that you have gathered to yourself over the course of your life. And all of that is in this film. All of that is shown as it relates to this woman's character.
The connectivity between, like, she has a meeting with an old friend from the newspaper where she used to write, because she's trying to get some dirt on these developers. Mm-hmm. And of course, he, you know, this guy who's a big newspaper editor, his brother is an architect, and the architect right. works with a development firm. The brother is, in fact, the godfather of
right.
the son who's yep. been educated in America, who's trying to drive her out of the apartment. But then she also has these other connect. I mean, like, it's everything is just incestuous, and who you know, and who's got the dirt, and who has the, you know, damning information, and when they're going to introduce it.
That may or may not help her.
Right.
One thing I really love about this film is that, very much like Neighboring Sounds, it is about the power of place.
Yes.
And what places mean to you.
Right.
And I was thinking a lot about that personally while I watched it, because this is, in fact, a conversation I had with Loretta this afternoon about getting rid of stuff. Editing your possessions to get rid of things that you no longer need. And, you know, are you kind of a pack rat or are you not? And we were talking about how you tend toward the pack ratishness. And yes. I am ruthless.
You're clearing the decks.
About getting rid of things. And I said, in spite of the fact that I don't hold objects in much sentimental value, I have a very strong attachment to places. I have made almost a dogged adult fetish out of staying put. I have lived in this apartment for 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like I should have to go anywhere.
Oh, hell no.
I'm very happy in this apartment. It's not a new apartment. It's got some beat-down qualities to it. Our kitchen floor is currently in shreds, and we need to have that replaced. But I'm staying.
Yeah.
Whatever it takes until I need help walking down the stairs, which at that point will mean that we're just up and moving to Atlanta to let your family take care of us, because we're gonna be 85 years old.
And impoverished writers.
Yeah. Oh, hey, guess what? We're 85, and we were journalists our whole life, and podcasters and writers.
Oops, we ain't got no money.
Hello, family. We're here to be
tended to.
We're here to be tended to.
In our dotage.
We both have diapers that need changing. So, I love the lived-in quality of this film. Yeah. I love the unhurried quality. Mm-hmm. I love that it is about a life, and it is about one person's life, and it's not full of stuff that happens to her. In fact, if I'm going to complain about anything, it is the otherwise entirely satisfying ending, because I feel as though,
I don't know,
it has a bit of the movie to it instead of the real life to it.
I don't know that the ending necessarily promises
it doesn't
catharsis.
It doesn't promise catharsis, but it does give you a zing to walk out on.
It's a zing, but I think it's not such a zing that you think, oh well, all fixed.
Everything's,
you know,
fixed for her. No. I won't say anything more about the ending. But otherwise, I love this.
Yeah, no, it's terrific.
I love this. I love Neighboring Sounds. I love this guy. You know who he, in a way, and not simply because they're both South American, but Lucretia Martel.
Oh, yeah.
Feels like a kindred spirit.
Yeah, movies about houses.
She is... I feel as though she has a darker soul.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah. I need to see more of her stuff. I've only seen one or two. But
if you haven't seen any of Lucretia Martel's films,
La Cienaga or The Headless Woman.
There, that's my DVD recommendation.
Okay, well, mine was Neighboring Sounds.
If you can find La Cienaga, please watch it.
I want to say there's a Criterion, but I'm not sure.
2001, 2002, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Spell Cienaga,
S-C-I-E-N-A-G-A, La Cienaga. It's not spelled like the street here, La Cienega.
Our street, La Cienega. This is Cienega.
Yeah.
It's the same word, though, right?
I think it's variations on it.
Swamp.
Yeah.
Okay. The second best film of the week is one that we talked about last week, which I have finally seen. Mm. It's last week's best film.
Yes.
13th.
Yes. Ava DuVernay's new documentary, which is on Netflix globally. So wherever
you're
listening to this show, if you're
already
on Netflix, you got to see this movie.
She's two for two now. Selma.
Well, I would say three for three because I like Middle of Nowhere.
Oh, that's right. Middle of Nowhere. I completely forgot.
And she made a movie before that, too, but I forget what it's called.
She made a movie before Middle of Nowhere?
Yeah.
I don't know that at all.
I've forgotten what it's called.
I had forgotten about Middle of Nowhere, which is also very good.
Yes.
But this is about the 13th Amendment, the amendment that freed the slaves.
Mm.
And simultaneously...
And had a loophole.
Perhaps without even intending to...
Yeah.
Instituted another form of...
institutionalized
terribleness for black people in the United States. In that amendment is the provision that no one in the United States can be made a slave unless they're in prison. And then they have to do whatever they're told.
Yeah.
All day, all night, whatever. And over the course of the next, you know, the next 100 years, the segregationist Jim Crow laws came along that effectively kept black Americans from living their lives in any reasonable, dignified way.
And then you had Nixon's war. Oh, I'd explain what this was about last week. So, I mean, you know, but yeah, it's
so densely informative.
Yeah.
And so full of smart people telling you things that you might not have known. And Gary Cotty was over hanging out, watching it with me. And about every 15 minutes, he'd say, I never knew that. I never knew that. And at one point, we paused it, and I said, here's why you never knew it. And some of the things that I never knew. Because we're white.
Mm.
And white people are, no matter what your circumstance, whether you're born poor or rich, you were born with money, I was born with no money. That's a fact. But both of us are white.
Yes.
You had a funny vowel-sounding last name, but basically you're a white European. White people in the United States are protected from knowing about this stuff. Everything about life in the United States is designed to keep white people pretty happy. You know what? You know, I might be poor and stuff, other stuff might be wrong with my life, but I can still walk down the street.
Yeah. But if we can arrest you for some crock thing, and then, you know, you can chop your sentence by copping a plea instead of going to trial, and then, you know, you accept the plea, but then discover that now you're marked a felon, which means that once you get out, you can't get a job anywhere.
If you are... Now, I will say this. This is related to the show 60 Days In that I was watching for LKTV a few months back.
Mm-hmm.
If you're white and you wind up with a drug offense, if you're poor and wind up with a drug offense, then you're in the same boat.
Really?
Yeah. Because you're going to be stuck in jail until you can pay the bail or not. And your trial might not come along. And you are just going to be in jail.
In limbo, basically.
In limbo for the crime of being poor.
Yeah.
And so...
But specifically but on a racial front, you've got,
the point of the film.
If you get caught selling crack, you know, you're going to get a much stiffer sentence than an upscale dealer who's selling powder cocaine.
Yes. Yes.
And as I pointed out last week, crazily
enough. And that's in the film. We're not speculating here.
No, crazily enough, Newt Gingrich comes into the film to talk about how this is a bad thing.
Yeah. He was blowing my mind.
Yeah.
I was like, why are you speaking sense? You're such a horrible monster.
Who are you and what have you done with Newt Gingrich?
You're such a horrible monster of a person. Why are you speaking sense in this movie? But he was. This is a really powerful, strong film.
Yes.
And, you know, everything you never knew about what it's like to be black in the United States. Obviously, if you're black and you're listening, you already know. But... go ahead and watch it anyway. It's a really good movie.
Yeah, it's an amazing piece of advocacy journalism and beautifully shot and
the way she does
and impactfully edited.
She has such a good relationship with so many good cinematographers.
Well, I know that for Selma, she had, I'm blanking on the guy's name, the guy who shot Most Violent Year and
right.
And I don't know if he shot this one as well, but
maybe.
We have our act together today. Yes, see 13th by all means. It's really powerful. Okay, Hans Charles and Kira Kelly shot 13th. Bradford Young, who is I think one of the best. I don't want to say young, but I mean I think he's under 40 cinematographers working right now.
He's at least under 50, which makes him young.
If this is true in this field, by all means, yeah. So, but yeah, you're right. Her, you know, like you were saying before, and on LKTV, that Queen Sugar also looks extraordinary.
The accountant is weird and goofy.
I'm reminded of last week's...
dividing the film critic community. Yes.
I'm reminded of last week's Saturday Night Live, the first one to air after the release of the Trump tape, where Alec Baldwin goes, "America, do I not entertain you?" The accountant is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And yet, I was never not enjoying myself.
Had a great time
yeah.
watching this absurd...
It's bonkers.
Film. I wouldn't call it bonkers, but I would call it...
Not structurally, but just narratively.
It's near bonkers.
Okay.
But it is certainly silly.
Yes.
A man with high-functioning autism, played by Ben Affleck, is a crack accountant. He can do anything. He can add and subtract all the things all the time in his head, kind of just like you.
Oh, his powers are way beyond mine.
I don't know.
I don't do that many digits the way he does in the movie.
Yeah, you do a lot of them. You're really weird with numbers in your head. Great at all.
You're easily impressed because you can't calculate.
You can't add anything without a calculator.
But
we ummed at the same time.
But in addition, he's also like a ninja master and a sniper.
The best sniper.
Yes.
Like, Bradley Cooper needs to take lessons from this guy. He can shoot the smile off a cantaloupe at a mile.
At a mile.
Yeah. It's nuts. And there's a cantaloupe with a smile.
Yes.
On it in the film. That wasn't just me making up imagery in my head.
When it was over, I was walking out with some other critics, and somebody said, "Boy, I really... don't envy the task of anybody having to synopsize the plot of this movie."
It's so
there's so many tendrils of it. There's these it's an origin story. Like, the accountant is basically a superhero with a pocket protector.
And it's not based on anything.
It's not based
on a comic book. It's not based on an airport novel.
No, you'd think it would be an airport novel, but no, completely original from the guy who wrote The Judge
of all things.
And so you've got all this backstory about how this. You know, high functioning autistic math whiz also became a, you know, ninja and a crack shot. And then there's the mysterious voice on the phone who seems to be controlling like everybody. There is J.K. Simmons is the head of the Fed who blackmails a junior agent into finding Ben Affleck. Meanwhile, he, to try and duck the heat from the fact that he does all this work for like despots and drug lords, goes to fix the books of this like robotics company run by John Lithgow, whose sister's
Jean Smart.
Yeah. And then, but meanwhile, he's being pursued by John Bernthal.
We don't know
as
why.
A wisecracking hitman. Like, there's just so many plates.
His co-worker, Anna Kendrick.
Anna Kendrick is trying to get close to him.
And we don't know why.
Yeah. He's got an Airstream trailer that's got, like, all the guns and, like...
All the money.
And all the money and all the paintings.
And a real Jackson Pollock.
Yeah, and, like, a real... Like, is it a Monet
or Renoir. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, wait, what? It just never ends, this film.
You follow along because you have no choice. You forget that anything resembling real life...
Yeah, logic goes out the window
early
and often.
And then either you decide you're down or you're not. And I'm watching the percentages on Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes. And it's like...
They're like down the middle.
It's 50-50.
Yeah. I even said in my review, like, this is the kind of thing you either laugh at it or get engaged in, and engagement is easier than you'd think.
Or you're irritated by the how preposterous it is.
Right, but that's not getting in. That's the laughing at it. Laughing at it or being mad at it, or just either accepting it or just being amused by its craziness and just wanting to go for the ride to see how far they're going to go.
I had a very good time.
I had a blast. It was dumb, but I had a really good time.
I don't want to tell anybody where it all goes.
No, by all means, no.
And I would go see the sequel.
Oh, totally, yeah. No, that was the other thing I said in my review, that this is the rare tentpole where you're like, okay, I would watch, as I was joking, The Accountant's Return. That's not even really my joke. Juzo Itami did a movie in the 80s called A Taxing Woman about a Japanese tax agent who's a super accountant as well. And then there was a sequel called A Taxing Woman's Return.
I did not know that.
Yes.
So you saw Kevin Hart, the latest, how many, the fourth?
Third concert film. Yeah. What's it called? What Now? What Now?
All right.
The first one was like, I think AMC Theaters distributed it themselves and only showed it in AMC Theaters.
Is that so?
Yeah, but it did like shockingly well.
I reviewed it.
Yeah, it was before they created Open Road Films, which is like half AMC and half somebody else.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so that did actually pretty well. And then the second one, Lionsgate released, now Universal is doing it. So he's just climbing that ladder.
Yeah. He's climbed actually to the top of ladder in terms of the venues
that he
can bring audiences in to watch a stand-up show.
This is you're watching a record-breaking concert because he literally is the first stand-up comedian to sell out a football stadium. He's performing in front of like 50,000 people at Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia.
If you're at that show,
yeah,
and you're the farthest away,
you're watching the screens
from the stage. You're watching the screens, but are you happy? Are you happy? can you? I mean, I've only ever been to comedy shows in small comedy clubs.
I've been to ones in like theater. No. We saw Kathy Griffin years ago in like a theater space.
A small theater.
Yeah, relatively small.
All right. Small enough that we could see her.
Yes.
All right. Yeah.
But there are comedians that play.
Also, our tickets were free.
Yes.
And so it wouldn't have mattered all
right,
that much.
But I'm just saying, but there are comedians who play like the big venues, and then this is the kind of comedian that plays the really big venues.
Right.
And if you are buying the cheap seats, you know what you're in for.
I guess you do.
It's not like you get there and you're going to be up in balcony DD, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, you might as well have just waited for this movie to come out. But,
right.
But then he wouldn't be playing in front of a record crowd, so it all feeds into each other. Anyway.
I didn't see it. I've seen the other two. They were funny enough.
Yeah. And this
I
one,
like his stand-up.
This one is pretty funny, too. I mean, I laughed consistently enough. I didn't laugh at everything. And he does some sort of repetition/callback stuff that I thought was kind of lazy. But, you know, in front of a crowd of 50,000, you can't be blamed for wanting to do a few things that are safe.
I can blame you for that.
I didn't see the first. Did the first one have, like, bookending sequences?
The second one did. I can't remember if the first one did.
Yeah, the second one had bookending sequences to one director did the live stuff, and then Tim Story, who did like the Fantastic Four movies, the not the most recent one, but the two, the Fantastic Four and Rise of the Silver Surfer,
right.
Did those two, and Taxi, and like Think Like a Man, and you know, a bunch of stuff. Anyway, he directs the bookending stuff. The bookending stuff in the previous movie, Let Me Explain, was kind of pointless. I mean, even pointless in terms of not even not working at all, because like. It's a party scene, and Kevin Hart gets confronted with people asking about, like, you know, is it true that you and your father don't get along, or that you only date light-skinned women? He's like, let me explain. And then he goes on stage.
Yes.
And then he goes on stage and does a stand-up routine in which he addresses none of those things.
Right.
So
right.
It's like, well, what was... Huh? So this one, they're at least not even trying to connect it to the actual show. The idea is that half an hour before taking the stage at this record show, he, like, gets involved in this, like, James Bond stuff. So he's like, he meets up with Halle Berry and they're at a fancy hotel. She's got a briefcase full of money. He sits in on a, you know, Texas Hold'em tournament. Don Cheadle is there, and he like drives Don Cheadle up the wall by not betting in time. And that's actually, there's some funny stuff there. Halle Berry's really funny. Like, she has some fun give and take with Hart. It's ultimately doesn't mean anything, but it's cute and it's amusing enough. The stuff at the beginning, then they come back to it at the end. And not only is it super no reason to be there, but it kind of undercuts the end of, hey, I just performed this show in front of 50,000 people. Like, that's your ending.
Right.
That's your ending right there. And as Christy pointed out, usually with concert films, there's way too much of the sort of behind the scenes stuff.
Yes.
But in this one, given that this was actually a record breaking thing where no comedian has done this before,
it might have been cool to see a little.
Behind the scenes might have helped. Yeah, like when did tickets go on sale? How fast did they sell out? What was the, you know, any of that kind of stuff? And instead, we get this sort of spy shenanigans.
How much were the tickets?
That would be interesting too.
I'm always interested in finding out how much the tickets are.
Like, you know, did you have to see that 9/11 concert movie? No, not, was it 9/11?
What are you talking about?
There was it was the Hurricane Sandy concert movie.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, so the whole movie is about how, like, how it got put together and how isn't Harvey Weinstein amazing? He has Paul McCartney's phone number, you know. But like, they never stop and actually tell you like how much they raised, who got it, right. You know. Like, right. there's all this sort of like sad stuff about people who had these devastating losses from the hurricane and stuff, but then there's no follow-up at the end of like, oh, but now thanks to the concert we were able to rebuild our house, or, you know, it was like you're leaving out all the stuff I want to know.
I think every concert should cost what it costs to see Fugazi.
How much is that?
$5.
It should be $5.
Yeah. That's every time I saw Fugazi.
$5.
$5. Didn't matter where they were. $5. They did not care. That's why I liked Fugazi so much.
Well, Kevin Hart is not punk rock.
No, he's not.
And he is very aggressively non-political.
Oh, I know.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
But at least, like, is also, and I think this is smart of him, because it's not just about, I think there's a big chunk of his audience that would be turned off by it. He's not homophobic.
No, he's not.
You know, despite the fact that he co-starred in Get Hard, his actual stand-up is not homophobic.
No, he and Will Ferrell, neither of them are homophobic. The movie they were in was stupidly homophobic in a way that didn't understand how homophobic it was.
But they obviously didn't understand it either by reading when they read the script.
Straight guys who don't get it.
Hmm.
That's the worst you can accuse them of.
I guess.
Being straight, clueless. Straight and clueless.
Gotcha.
So, all right, well, you know, if it comes on cable, I'll probably watch it.
Yeah, he has hit that point in his career, like, with the...
Because we still have cable.
That's right. Because we're old. He's at that point in his career that they make fun of in Funny People, where, like, oh, yeah, I'm still doing stand-up, but now it's about my kid's private school education and my giant house. You know.
How giant is his house?
Well, he talks about like having this really long driveway and how there's no lights because he thought the contractors were trying to screw him, so he didn't want lights in the driveway, but now he's got to do this long walk in the dark to take the trash out, and there's like coyotes, and he's afraid of wild animals, and so it's like, that's a long driveway, and the way he tells the story, like, you can just tell we're talking about a house.
Well, that's like Calabasas.
I suppose.
That's out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's Kardashian country.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Shin Godzilla.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's really entertaining. I called it on Facebook Gojira versus In the Loop.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, kind of.
This is political satire Godzilla.
It's from Toho. It's from the Godzilla people.
Yeah. Which, as Bibbs put it, every time they think they're getting out of the Godzilla business, then America makes one, and they're like, no, 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 no,
right.
And they start over again.
Right.
This is the third reboot.
Would we call this a reboot?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they
This is a hard reboot. The whole movie is about them.
They've never encountered Godzilla before.
Yeah. Like, okay. There's that joke about, like, oh, I looked up the word Godzilla in Google, and I got one hit.
Yeah.
You know, there's the Showa, there's the Heisei, there's the Millennium, and now there's whatever this is going to be.
So this is the next, the fourth.
This is the fourth, the third reboot.
The third reboot, the fourth
iteration.
Phase of Godzilla's film story.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. This, they didn't know. They spent all the time talking about it, identifying it. And yeah, what am I? I'm being stupid.
Yes, you are.
So in this version, Godzilla comes along and they don't know what it is,
And when it starts, it's not even really Godzilla yet. It's this like sluggy,
yeah.
this giant sea slug with these puppet eyes
yeah.
that kind of crawls its way onto land. And of course, all these experts are like, oh, well, it won't be able to support its own weight. Oh, it's supporting its own weight. You know,
they refer to it as some kind of perhaps giant whale, which.
Yeah. Goshida is what, whale gorilla or
yeah.
something?
Yeah. And they get to the point where they have to call it something. This may be my favorite part of the film, where they talk about how the Americans have already named it Godzilla. And they say, well, it says here, the Japanese characters say Gojira. And then, as you refer to her, deadpan science lady,
no.
just kind of rolls her eyes and said, look, it doesn't matter.
So yeah, this is maybe the first Japanese, this is the first of the Toho films where the title is Godzilla.
I was, before seeing it, I was confused about the title because you've got a Japanese word, Shin,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and an American word, Godzilla.
Yeah.
It should either be called Godzilla Resurgence.
Or Shin Gojira.
Or Shin Gojira. But there's a reason why it's called
Shin Godzilla.
Because of this battle over who gets to name it,
yeah,
Japan or America. And the dripping sarcasm related to the word Godzilla is the palpable.
Well, the movie is very, first of all, it starts out kind of making fun of Japanese bureaucracy. Like as somebody yeah. pointed out, not since Ikiru have you seen this many levels of Japanese bureaucracy. Because like this crisis happens and it's like
there's and the a book gets passed and
there's
passed
a meeting and a conference and a meeting passed. And a conference. Yeah. And like
meetings go nowhere and there's wind up with no consensus.
And there are these chirons on screen that tells you like what the conference is, and then the guy speaking is like the assistant minister of blah blah blah. You know, and so you think they're sort of setting something up. But there's like one of those in every scene. Like every 2 minutes there's a new chiron of a new meeting or a new government minister, and it's almost like in Godard's, you know, A Woman is a Woman, where like those musical numbers keep almost starting but never actually starting. It becomes a joke in and of itself, just this bombardment of the chirons.
You heard it here. Shin Godzilla compared to Godard's A Woman is a Woman.
And so
I do love that angle of it. Not only is it political satire, but it is entirely reminiscent of every Godzilla movie, because you have these endless meetings of people talking about what to do, where is it, how do we address this.
But usually,
and in those older films, there's always a very decisive person in the room who says, we're going to do this. And everyone says, hi. And here,
it just drags on.
Nothing gets resolved. No one wants to be responsible. No one wants to take a step out and say, I say we do this.
So then once they finally, you know, we have a group of scientists who are all like sort of legendarily not part of the bureaucracy, and they're sort of a pain in everyone's keister. They're the ones huddling in a room trying to figure out what to do. Then you get stuck with, what does the UN want to do? And what does Russia and China and the United States think we need to do? And ultimately they're like, well, they just say we should nuke it. And it's right. like, and the Japanese people are like, seriously, again with this?
I love that angle too.
Yeah.
It is the weirdest.
It's the post 9/11 post Fukushima Godzilla.
Yeah, because this Godzilla is a terrorist. He is not.
Oh yeah, this is not friend to children Godzilla in any
way.
No. This is a genuinely frightening Godzilla.
Yeah.
Like this is a monster movie where I don't think I've been this frightened of Godzilla ever, because he's just this force of destruction.
Yeah. It's funny and it's smart and it knows itself.
Yes.
And it knows its history and it's playing with that and it's playing with you. And I cannot recommend this highly enough. If you don't ever care about watching Godzilla films, if you're not straight up kaiju nerds like we are,
then this is the one to see.
This is the one. Yeah. It's a fascinating new direction for Godzilla. I don't know what they're going to do next.
But I can't wait.
If this, I mean, Well, you know, they could just keep making this joke. Yeah.
Well, no, or maybe now there will be the next movies will take place in a universe where they know what Godzilla is.
Right.
So, you know, they'll have to, we'll see where they go with it.
And then along comes Biollante.
The one
the most boring of all the monsters.
He's a flower.
Yeah.
The only thing that bugged me in this one, and we talked about it, was John Powers on the show when we talked about Mountains Made Apart, or was that a separate conversation?
I don't remember.
In any event, a thing that bugged me in Mountains Made Apart that they do here, where you're given a character who is Asian, in this case Japanese, yes. In the other film Chinese,
yes.
Who the backstory is, was raised overseas, speaks English as a first language, and is now coming back and having to sort of deal with the local mores and blah, blah, blah. Problem with the character in this film is that when she opens her mouth to speak English, if you also speak English, you know that English is not her first language. And there have to be any number of Japanese actresses out there who speak perfect English and also speak good enough Japanese to be in a Japanese movie playing a character who was not raised in Japan.
Yes.
And why they didn't cast one of those women, I don't know. But it's like, it just, you know, if you're, and if you're Japanese and don't speak English, you probably wouldn't notice. But if you do speak English, it's distracting.
Agree.
But that's it. Other than that, loved it.
Got some letters.
Yes. Oh, well, yeah, we did our DVD picks already, so yes. What do we got?
Got two letters. We had a third one, but I need to check something out.
Okay.
Before reading. This is from Kate. Hey, guys. I've been a long-time follower of Dave White.
Well.
Across several media, but only started listening to the podcast recently when a move blessed me with a 3-hour daily commute by train.
Oof.
Ugh.
Well, better by train than by car.
Yes. No, that's true. And I hope it's 90 minutes one way.
I was going to say, that's a lot.
3 hours one way, please. I have very much enjoyed the weekly cinematic insights.
Mm.
Do we have those?
Do
we have cinematic insights?
They're sprinkled in there somewhere.
All right. As well as just generally enjoying your banter, I posted a list as part of a Twitter hashtag #Fave7Films. However, after listening to this week's podcast, I've changed my mind about what to include. My original list was made up of favorite movies, which are very much based on my personal history, thinking about a list of films I consider the best, or at least movies that have really stayed with me, and that I still think about, in some cases decades after I first saw them, I came up with a different selection, in no particular order, Spirited Away.
Yay.
Daughters of the Dust.
Great.
It's getting re-released.
Getting reissued, and is it like in 4K or something?
I don't know.
Some kind of remastering, yeah. Yes.
The Science of Sleep.
Mm.
I liked it.
Mm.
I'm a big fan of Science of Sleep. I have a better experience with Michel Gondry than you do, I think, overall.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, that's the one with Gael Garcia Bernal and
Charlotte Gainsbourg.
Charlotte Gainsbourg, yeah, not a fan.
Sullivan's Travels.
Okay.
Wall-E.
Okay.
Limelight.
Mm.
Do you know I've never seen Limelight.
I've seen it once. Not my favorite Chaplin, but it's interesting.
Yeah. Red.
Ooh, Kieslowski.
That's what I'm going to assume it's Kieslowski.
Yeah.
A Night at the Opera.
Yeah.
Hero Dreams of Sushi, which I have not seen. Yeah, and The Exorcist.
Oh, yeah.
Kate, you are 100% knife.
95.
You're 95% knife because Alonso Duralde does not find The Science of Sleep as charming as you did.
Here's something I didn't know until I heard it today on the Flophouse. The guy who directed Hero Dreams of Sushi also directed The Lazarus Effect.
Really?
Yes.
Seriously?
Seriously.
That's weird.
I know. Go figure.
I don't understand. Okay. Anyway, thank you for your insightful... Sorry. Thank you for your thoughtful commentary. I've got insightful on the brain. She said we were insightful.
He thinks I'm cute.
Thank you for your thoughtful commentary, and particularly thank you for letting me know about the existence of Women He Undressed, which I found on Amazon Prime.
Hooray.
Explain what that is.
Documentary by Gillian Armstrong about the legendary Australian-born Hollywood costume designer Ori Kelly, who won 3 Oscars and did clothes for like a bunch of movies that you love, and also had an affair with young Cary Grant.
It's good, and it'll make you hate Cary Grant.
Well, you'll enjoy him on screen.
He was a real D.
Yeah, off screen, sadly.
Which I found on Amazon Prime over the weekend and thought was just divine.
Hmm.
With best regards, Kate.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you, Kate. This is from Matthew. This is a quote. This is my husband, Kevin, every other weekend. Remember that movie? Has that guy that has that show where he did the thing? You know. Thank you.
We've all been there.
That's why you've got the internet.
That's right.
Okay, you going to read our two-star review?
You
want to read our two-star review?
Hang on.
It's pretty good.
I have to get it and send it to you. Hold on a second.
Oh, okay.
Okay, share with the class.
Okay, so on iTunes, you can, we sometimes will read you our iTunes reviews.
Yes.
We're always so very happy because our reviews are, you know, 4 stars, 5 stars, 4 stars, 5 stars. There's a 2-star.
Mm.
I don't know the name of this person. It is screen name NM Bio Guy. Subject line, I tried. God knows I tried. Dude, me too.
Who are you?
I tried every week to make you happy. It didn't work. Okay. I love movies, and I love hearing people talk about movies. Well, there you go. That's what we do.
Yeah.
But after a year, we'll come back to that span of time later. After a year of listening to this podcast, I had to give up. The last one I heard from October 9th was nearly 15 minutes of personal information and chit-chat between Dave White and Alonzo Duralde, spelled incorrectly.
Yes.
With a Z.
Mm.
You're Alonzo with an S.
Not Liza with a Z.
Not Liza with a Z. Chit-chat that was at once mind-numbing and soul-crushing.
Wow.
I had no idea I had that kind of power.
I didn't know our chit-chat was so potent.
I turned it off, and I won't go back. The problem I have when listening to a married couple working together is that they often forget that the listener doesn't usually feel comfortable hearing about personal issues, peccadilloes, or general claptrap about the relationship. If I wanted that, I would read gossip newspapers about interesting people instead of these guys. Seriously, I want film discussions. That's all caps, film.
Mm-hmm.
Not nitpicking at each other, talking about what they're making for dinner, personal interactions with Hollywood people, or anything even remotely what you get with this podcast. I'll find a podcast where the reviewers behave like professionals instead.
Well, good luck and Godspeed. That ain't us.
You know, it's funny. The first thing sorry.
Yes.
We have disappointed you. We have been exactly this for 5.5, going on 6 years now.
Mm-hmm.
We are not changing at all.
Even though it took you a year to figure this out.
That's the part I don't understand. Like, I don't mind that he doesn't like what we
do.
That doesn't bother me one second.
Like, 2 or 3 episodes would tell you that's what we're getting. That's what we do, you know?
Like, 2. You don't even need the third one.
Yeah.
Just 2. 2 of them.
Any 2.
And you get 2 of them, and you're going to get a discussion about the blueberry muffins that I made and why I can't stop hitting the microphone accidentally and my favorite brand of tea and your inability to pick up stuff around the house. And I have never considered this podcast to be exactly one thing or the other.
No.
It is primarily, I think, a film podcast.
Yes.
And I think our critical acuity is a solid 6 out of 10.
We're insightful, damn it.
I'd say 6. Okay. I'm being a generous person.
At the very least.
I'd give us a good 60% of critical, you know,
heft.
Yeah, smartitude. And then, you know, there's just that stuff.
There's the chit-chat and clap-trap.
There's chit-chat and chit-chat and clap-trap and falderall.
And peccadilloes.
So I'm sorry, you know, if anyone doesn't like that, but let's say this is your first time listening and you're just struggling to get through to the end because this is what we're doing. You know what? There are lots of other film podcasts out there that are not hosted by married couples that behave, you know, very professionally, and
they get right to it.
Produced well, and it's not done at a dining room table, and it sounds It's got to sound better than this. And maybe they're serious-minded in a way that we sometimes are not.
We won't hold it against you.
Yeah. Enjoy. Like, we don't... It's fine. It's fine. It's like we don't... our feelings aren't going to be hurt.
Right.
But a year? He listened a year? Like, it took 52 episodes?
That does boggle the mind.
I don't understand.
Did he think we were going to stop?
I guess, and you know what makes me feel bad? Here's where I feel bad. I feel bad, like, what if it's like, you know how you're in an abusive relationship?
And you yes, think, I do know.
You think, this time, it's going to be different. This time. Like, he's not gonna beat me this time. But they just keep beating
they're
me.
They're not going to spend 15 minutes talking about donuts.
Yeah,
yes, we are.
Yeah, we are. Every week for the rest of the existence of this podcast, we're going to spend 15 minutes or more at the beginning, in the middle, as a digression, as a complete brain blip where we just, you know, dart down another path to talk about absolutely nothing related to the film. That's how it is.
This is what you get.
In the land of linoleum knife, that's what it is.
Yeah.
So
this is the show, as Rip Taylor likes to say.
I apologize to NM Bio Guy that we...
wasted his time.
He wasted his own time, really.
Because, this is true.
Because
you're right.
He's
slow on the uptick.
After two episodes. That's it. After two. You know, three. Three is a set. Interior designers will tell you that if you have three of anything, you have a collection. So, I'll give you three. Listen to three. If you don't like us after three, then you don't like us.
Yes, you're not. It's not going to change.
No. So we will never change, and we will never be as professional as you want us to be. NM Bio Guy.
So it's best that you see other podcasts.
Enjoy that.
We will always think well of you.
Yeah. I wish you liked us.
Yeah.
I like it. I like being liked.
Of course. Who doesn't?
But I don't mind being disliked.
No.
So much.
And we're certainly not going to pander to people who expect professionalism. That's not how we roll.
I don't know that pandering's the right word.
For that. It's the one I decided to use.
Yeah.
So
we're done.
Okay.
That's it.
All right. Well, gosh.
Thanks.
Thank you to those of you who stuck around and don't mind.
Ooh.
What?
Ooh. Ooh.
What?
Ooh.
What?
I got a commercial.
Oh, really?
I have a commercial.
For whom?
Us.
Oh.
Guess what we have?
What?
Things.
Oh, that's right.
This is why we're so inept.
We didn't write any of this down.
We've got stuff to sell, and we forgot to tell everybody that until the last second. All right.
And this is new stuff. So, it's newish.
It's restocking of old stuff.
But it's nothing we've talked about in a while. So if you thought this was just going to be another pitch for Patreon, this is something else entirely.
Here's what's up. The original black linoleum knife t-shirts.
With white lettering.
Black shirt. With the word the words linoleum knife across the chest in white letters, they have returned.
Yes.
And they are not just for people who are subscribers.
They are for everyone.
They are for anybody who has $22. Yes, they used to be 20. Guess what? Life got more expensive.
That's true.
The postage got more expensive. The shirts got more expensive. Everything got more expensive. We're passing that on to you. They are $22.
Yes.
We have sizes. We have, I believe, lady sizes, if I'm not mistaken.
You ordered them.
I know. I think we have lady sizes. Small, medium, large, extra large.
And also...
I'm 99% certain we have lady sizes. I'd have to go look at the order.
And then and also we have man sizes.
And we have the man sizes. We have the man sizes all the way up to, I think, 3X.
Okay.
We may even have a 4X.
Okay, we have now done what we should have done before this show even started and pulled up the invoice. So what do we have, Dave White? What are our sizes?
We have ladies' sizes, small, medium, large, extra large. Not a lot, but some.
Yes.
We have men's sizes, small, medium, large, extra large, 2X, 3X, 4X. 3X.
All right. And they are all now, first come, first served, and this is a limited run.
3X and 4X, again, we don't have a lot.
Yeah.
All right. So these are $22. Linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
That's where you PayPal us?
That's where you PayPal us.
You tell us what you're ordering, how many of the things you're ordering, and where you're having them sent.
Yeah. We have another thing for sale.
Yes. It's called, the most wonderful time of the year.
As we approach Halloween, or as we like to call it in this house.
Not Christmas one.
Not Christmas number one. We have Alonzo Duralde's book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
We do.
Published by Limelight Editions.
Mm-hmm.
Fine, long-standing publisher of entertainment-based
literature
books. You can buy this book on the internet, on Amazon or any other website, for a cheap-ass amount of money. Like, probably like $5. But here's what you won't get. All the extra added treats that wind up in the special edition that we handcraft.
Yes.
And send to you gift wrapped like a Christmas present. That means you can just pass it off to anyone you want as a present. And it's going to have
done all the heavy lifting.
Yeah, it's got stuff in it too. And I mean, flat things that fit into the pages of a book. Some of those things are objects, and some of those things are additional linoleum knife content that you can only get if you are a Patreon subscriber. So let's say you're not a Patreon subscriber, or you want to give this book to a friend who isn't a Patreon subscriber, or who has no idea who we are at all, they get stuff. Extra stuff. The book and the extra stuff. Alonzo Duralde will sign the book. He will sign it to whoever you want it signed to.
Be it you or a giftee.
Yeah. This is $20, just like it was before. Now, the book retails for $17.
Yes. But that we're shipping it to you, we're giving you extra goodies, yeah. We're wrapping it, the whole nine yards.
So you're paying $17 plus $3 media mail postage, and you're getting the deluxe fancy special edition autographed with stuff stuffed into it and gift wrapped like a Christmas present. That's 20. So the t-shirt's 22, the book is 20.
Now you may think...
Again, linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. That's the PayPal.
Yes. You may think, oh, October 16th, I'm not even thinking about Christmas yet.
We're not selling these after the end of November.
Yeah.
We're going to be baking treats.
That's right.
Well, I'm going to be baking treats, and I don't have time.
Also, we don't have endless supplies of either.
And, that's also a fact.
And we have sold out of them in years past.
Yes.
So it would behoove you to get on the stick.
Yeah. You need to buy things.
The shirts make a great gift as well, of course.
Yes, they do.
The book definitely makes a great gift.
Absolutely.
And it's lovely for your own library if you're a fan of Christmas and or movies.
Or Christmas movies.
Especially that.
Yeah. All right, the end. Now we're done.
Okay. So, yes, thank you all for listening. Join our Patreon at patreon.com/linoleumknife. Check out our friends on the internet. Go to chrissylemire.com and listen to Bibbs and Whitney on the B-Movies podcast and Canceled Too Soon, and check out The Schmoes Know and Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley and The Comics Canon and The Sewers of Paris and The Joel Ryan Thing, Fat Guys of the Movies, Kevin Carr, who hosts Fat Guys of the Movies.
Kevin Carr ran into Ben Manners.
Yes, at an all-night horror
marathon.
Hello
to you, Kevin Carr. Hello to you, Ben Manners.
Yes, so that was cool of them to send us a picture. And hello to Wilson, who is a Patreon subscriber, who was wearing his black-on-white subscriber-only Linoleum Knife t-shirt when he ran into recent LKTV guests.
Where did they run into each other?
In San Francisco. Frank DeCaro and Jim Colucci.
Randomly on the street they ran into each other?
I didn't ask questions.
Okay.
You know, San Francisco, things happen.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Film Spotting SVU, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. Even if you have been listening to the show for a year and don't like that it takes us a while to get to the movies, leave us a review on iTunes. It does help people find the show.
Listen,
but ideally,
I
you're
only
somebody,
want five stars from
ideally,
now
ideally, you're somebody
bury
who likes
this two-star
the show.
Review.
Yeah, that would help, definitely. Please do that. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at LinoleumCast.
Don't nobody bring me no bad news anymore.
You can also leave us positive ratings on all the places that we stream, including Stitcher Radio, Google Play if you're an Android user, Podbean, and Satchel. And I just got us onto a new one, and I forgetting what it's called. We might not be on it yet, but I'll know it next
week. Podglorp.
So, yeah, exactly. Everyone, it's all about Podglorp now. And, of course, you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions or comments or top 10 lists. We are still backlogged on email, and we'll probably do an all-mail episode very soon. And, again, linoleumpodcast, all one word, @gmail.com is the PayPal address. If you want to purchase a $22 t-shirt or a $20 Christmas movie book, have yourself a movie Little Christmas. And, you know, that's...
Pod pud.
Stop. All right. So anyway, next week, like I said, we'll be talking about Tower and Certain Women, and also a ton of movies opening, including the new Jack Reacher, which I'm kind of marginally excited about because the first one was sort of
dump.
Ridiculously stupid, and the Ouija sequel and heaven knows what else. So all right, until then.
Goodbye.